I'm Fathery.
This is Dave.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
Welcome back aboard the Starship Texas for the 280th installment of the Text Trek podcast, the home of Star Trek fandom from deep in the heart of Texas, where we take a deep look at Star Trek, old and new. And tonight, we are talking about the top three things that Dave and I want to see in the final season of Star Trek Discovery, as well as the one thing that we hope that we don't see. We both have our own list that we came up with independently of one another before we had seen any of Star Trek Discovery Season 5. So this is stuff that we made a couple weeks ago. We have no idea what the other one wrote down.
Right. It could just be all profanity. I don't know.
We've done this before, though. This is kind of a tradition that we started for Discovery Season 1 way back in 2017, 7 years ago. 7 years ago, but it's only been five seasons because, you know, that's how TV's made. And there was a pandemic and also a strike. You know, the interesting thing, Dave, is that when the series finale of Discovery airs in a few short weeks in May, I think the last week of May is when the final episode will drop.
Mm-hmm.
That entire run from way back when it premiered, September 24th, 2017, when we watched the Vulcan Hello and the Battle at the Binary Stars.
Yep.
That time period will actually be 11 days longer than going from Encounter at Farpoint to All Good Things. The time that TNG took to release its seven seasons. So it's the same amount of time has passed.
Yeah, they just, TNG had the fortune of not running into a global pandemic.
Yeah. Also, they had to make almost three times the amount of episodes.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Father, am I right that when we first did our top 10 things that we want in Disco, it was a top 10, not top 3?
Yeah, but that was back in the crazy days when we had never seen the show before. So our things were so random. They were from, like, I was saying, I want them to say the title of the episode on screen when it cuts back after the teaser, like stuff like that.
Yeah. It was broad. It was like these very broad, like, here's what we want from Star Trek, just in general. But, you know, yeah, now we know what the show is. We're more focused. In a lot of ways, I've realized that, you know, like, I'm kind of content. You know, I don't have strong things where I'm like, if they don't do this, I'm gonna be upset or anything like that. But I do. We all know the show better now. And so I think I've got some fun stuff to mention.
And not only are we going to be talking about Disco Season 5, though, but we also have a lot of news. There was that big Variety article that came out a few days ago. People might already know what I'm talking about, but there was a lot of stuff announced in there. They were talking about Strange New World Season 3, the Section 31 movie with Michelle Yeoh, the Starfleet Academy series, and even theatrical Star Trek movies. You know, if people can remember, they used to put Star Trek movies in theaters. It's been a hot minute since they've done that, but it's a thing that used to happen.
That's not that old, Father.
How long has it been since Star Trek Beyond?
I don't know. You tell me.
It's been
8 years.
8 years. I think it'll actually be a full decade by the time the next movie comes out.
I mean, that is what we're looking at. But it's not to say they haven't balanced
it out. That's never happened before.
They haven't balanced it out with lots of TV, though. They did do that.
Yeah. But a lot of news, so we're going to get into that in just a second. I am, of course, obligated, as always, to, before we delve into our topic, say thank you and give a huge shout-out to the wonderful Text Trek Patreon supporters who make the weekly live show possible. So thank you so much. Starfleet Sohel, Cake is Eternal, Crazy Dutchie, Joanne Robertson, John Daw, Geek Filter, Quarks Bar, Stephanie Durantes, Matthew Averett, Braxton, Chuck A., Joel Valisok, and our anonymous supporters. We like to celebrate with our patrons with a monthly Patreon watch party. The next one is going to be in a couple of weeks, April 13th. This is going to be a big one. We're actually going to be watching my favorite Star Trek movie of all time. Speaking of Star Trek movies, But a lot of people probably already know what I'm talking about if you follow the show, but that is, of course, Leonard Nimoy's Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Doesn't get a ton of love, I know, but it is honestly, truly my favorite Star Trek film, and I'm looking forward to watching it with our Patreon supporters on April 13th. That movie turns 40 this year, and we're also going to be watching it like around my birthday, so it's a bit of a special celebration for me.
Father, you're as excited as, what's his name? What does Uhura call him? Mr. Adventure?
Oh, yeah. Be careful what you wish for, Lieutenant. Yeah, Admiral Kirk might just walk through the door any moment, so.
It's goddamn irregular.
It is. That would be goddamn irregular for sure if I turned around and TJ Hooker was standing there. But... That being said, though, that'll be April 13th, so you can come into the Patreon as little as $2 a month. That'll get you into the monthly watch parties. And if you can afford to be more generous, there's a lot of other cool perks in there. It's a great time to join, because we're going to have multiple watch parties in May. If you come in at the Bridge Crew level, we'll actually throw additional watch parties to have watch parties for your birthday. And you can pick a Star Trek movie, you can pick a couple Star Trek episodes, and we'll toss that on and watch that with you. So we're going to be doing a lot of that in May.
Yeah, you get to wield the captain's chair.
Yeah, it's fun. And it's a great group that shows up. So... but Dave, we got a lot of news to talk about, right? That Variety article a couple days ago.
Yeah, I'm ready.
I don't know if there is anything like just that really like caught you by surprise, or just like, wow, that's so cool, or like, oh my god, that's so scary. Or like, was there anything before we go into it? We're gonna kind of cover all of it, but was there anything that just like stood out as like a big deal to you?
You know, I don't think any of them were quite huge to me. Like the casting thing for there is a TNG character who's like from the Mirror Universe, or not Mirror Universe, but like that alternate world that.
Oh, Rachel Garrett.
That character. Yeah. So that didn't mean a whole lot to me, but I know it did to other people. A lot of people thought that was very notable, but I was a little surprised to hear the term YA used to describe the Star Trek Starfleet Academy show, and not necessarily in a bad way, but I think in my mind I had been picturing it pushing a little, skewing a little older, so I'm just like, you know, I might be realigning my perceptions of what it'll be.
I feel like they've used that term the whole time. I feel like we've been saying that for years, though, talking
Have
about
we?
It. Like, yeah.
I haven't.
But yeah, if you read the article, they had like some cool artwork that just kind of combined characters from all the different shows, all the different movies. We got Kelvin people, original series people, Berman era people, current secret hideout people, animated show people. So I love that. Whenever people ask, like, what do you think of when you think of Star Trek? I feel like some people want like a specific answer. Like, oh, I think of like Picard, or like, you know, something like that. But like, I always just think of like a whole bunch of stuff, like a big, massive variety of Star Trek stuff. So it's like, this is the type of stuff I think of when I think of Star Trek.
And, you know, it is nice that in addition to all the different eras represented, there's like a phaser and a tricorder in there, and like a comm badge in that image. So it's visually, it does reflect a lot of the... a lot of the look.
But the start with Strange New Worlds, that's the thing that we're probably going to see. Well, we're probably going to see Section 31 next, but Strange New Worlds is like the most shot. It's the most like along the way. I know they've actually wrapped shooting on Section 31, but they've already shot several episodes of Strange New Worlds. They're like on the last couple at this point. They showed a picture of a new set. I guess Spock is going to have a science lab in season 3. The set looks kind of cool, but I'm a little concerned they might be a little over the top. They were talking about it has a transparent floor on top of a 4-foot pool of water that swirls underneath. So I don't know if that's like a coolant system for a computer, or is it gonna be like a Cetacean op situation where like something lives in there. I don't know what it is, but it does kind of look neat.
Yeah, that's it's very visually rich. This is kind of like the last time I saw like sort of a notable big tech thing like that. I mean, they've had engine rooms and things of note, but what was it in Star Trek Generations when they plotted out the course for the it was Generations. What do they call the thing that
stellar cartography?
Yeah, the stellar cartography thing. That was like a big showpiece high tech room.
I like this more because it's like more like practical stuff that like, you know, it's not like you're constantly looking at effects. It's just like people like walking around like tools and equipment, and you know, probably feels just a bit more natural for longer sequences and stuff. But it's cool to see Ethan Peck in kind of a updated version of the environmental suit from The Naked Time. you know, that was, I believe, made out of shower curtain, and it didn't look like it was, like, all that sanitary, you know, it didn't keep the virus away, but... It's kind of a more practical looking, like, something like, if that was actually a useful suit, it looks kind of like that. I just worry that it might be, like, a little over the top for the TOS Enterprise. Like, I like it having kind of a mess hall type environment, but their port galley, it's almost like a little too, I don't know how I feel about them having, like, live music in there. I mean, I know, like, Uhura and Spock would, like, jam out in the mess hall, but it's like weird, like bands playing on stage on Kirk's Enterprise seems like a bit too much to, so I hope this doesn't come off as, like, too much flourish for what I want. And
you think it feels like a little too TNG, where you might have, you know, like an event that's kind of like bigger, like it doesn't feel small enough for the Enterprise, or
it feels like Kirk's Enterprise shouldn't have had quite all the trimmings that Picard's Enterprise had. So
when are we going to see the bowling alley?
They clearly have labs in the original series that they talk about all the time, you know, and we don't see them, so this is just one of those labs that we never saw, I guess.
You know who got their start in a lab doing botany shit? Sulu.
Sulu. Well, before that, he was a physicist in Where No Man Has Gone Before. So maybe Sulu will actually appear as a physicist in Strange New Worlds at some point.
That'd be interesting if he was if they work that in as, you know, some particular reason he transitions. Like, oh, there was that horrible physics accident where somebody got killed.
I would actually, like, those are the types of details that, like, Akiva Goldsman and the other writers and producers seem to, like, really like. You know, like Corby. They could have just, like, if they wanted to ignore Corby in the chat and just be like, yeah, we're not gonna touch that stuff with our take on Chapel, we're not gonna address the Corby stuff. But they like that minutia, they like digging that stuff up. So if they ever show Sulu, I bet that they're gonna reference, like, oh, well, he's a helmsman, but he's also into plants, and he's also a weapons expert, and he's also into science, and he's a physicist,
right? Like, he's a little bit of a what do you call it, a polymath. He's a
jack of all trades,
yeah.
Which was also kind of be Chekhov's thing. So I think that's cool. I think that's something that, like, Chekhov and Sulu, maybe they bonded over that. Like,
oh, hey, everyone
always talks about, you know, these specialists. Like, you got Kirk the captain, McCoy the doctor, Scotty the engineer, Spock the scientist. But you and me, like, we're just pretty good at everything. And we're the guys who actually keep the ship running. And so they get all the credit, but, you know, we're the ones that are actually doing the real work.
Yeah, I think that's a fun notion, and this is the kind of set that would be an interesting place to have some of those early conversations taking place if they wanted to.
They also talked to Ethan Peck and Anson Mount about, you know, working with the AR wall and stuff like that, and they all seem to, like, talk about that a lot. It must be, like, pretty impressive when you're, like, on set and you can see it.
We always hear it's disorienting. You have to focus on an object so you don't lose your orientation and get, like, dizzy or nauseous or any, you know, motion sickness stuff. I want to, like, see what that's like. I think that'd be pretty cool. But also, you know, you're already, like, remembering your lines, you know, keeping track of various marks and stuff and blocking and all that. And then, you know, like, it would be kind of difficult if you also had to worry about getting motion sickness.
And Jonathan Frakes talked about directing an episode of Strange New Worlds. He said that he directed an episode that they're calling it a Hollywood murder mystery. So I'm not sure exactly. I don't mean if it's like a traditional type of murder mystery you would get in a Hollywood movie, or if it's like set in Hollywood. They're investigating like a Hollywood murder. But
I mean, there are some movies like that. Yeah.
Frakes called it the best episode of television he's ever done. So that was his words. So he's pretty proud of it.
Bold words. But then they like to boldly go.
Yeah, I'm sure, like, a lot of directors will say that about, like, whatever, like, the last thing. It's not saying, like, they're dishonest and overselling it, but, you know, they're all hyped and fired up for it. So, of course, that's what they're into. I don't know. Was there anything else from Strange New Worlds that stood out to you, Dave? Or do you want to move on to Section 31?
I don't think there was any other big Strange New World stuff for me. So, yeah, we can jump ahead.
Okay, well, we're going to move over to Section 31 in just a moment. I need to acknowledge and thank Matthew Averett for the very kind and generous $10 super chat. Matthew Averett says, "Hello, Text Trek family. I hope you're having a great Friday. Have a happy Easter. Keep up the great work, everyone. It's appreciated." Yeah, day of recording is a good Friday, so I hope everyone's having a happy Easter weekend. Or if you're listening to the podcast on Monday or sometime later, I hope that you had a good Easter weekend.
Yeah, thank you, Matthew.
So Section 31, we got our first official image from it. They have confirmed that they finished shooting. They wrapped all that up. I think we're going to get it on screen. I think they didn't say it'd be out by the end of the year, but I think it'll be out by the end of the year. Dave, what do you think of the Section 31 stuff?
I'm not going to say. It's a potent image. I think it's fun. Because I cannot tell what's happening, and my mind wants me to try and figure out what is happening. So it is Michelle Yeoh kind of up close, almost seductively, or like she's whispering something to the bat. And you just see the back of the head of somebody who's a bald guy with tattoos and cybernetics, including what looks like almost like a cybernetic mohawk kind of thing. It looks like, or like a Klingon head ridge.
Like when Picard snapped the Borg Queen spine in First Contact at the end, when he like broke her neck with the, because they had to do Action Captain, the big dramatic
right
neck snap thing. But it's like if someone like wore that on top of their head as a mohawk.
Jill in the audience says it reminds her too much of Leland and Control.
But I hated the image when I saw it. It made me uncomfortable. But then when I read, like, the explanation of it, I felt a lot better. It's like, oh, under that context, it would make sense.
Wait, what was the explanation of it? I thought that this was just purely an image and they didn't... I didn't remember what the...
I think it's from the scene that the reporter described. They not only did they have someone who was, like, on set during Strange New World Season 3 production talking to Anson Mount and Ethan Peck about the AR wall, but they also had a reporter who observed them shoot some Section 31 stuff, and they described a scene where Rachel Garrett, a young Rachel Garrett, played by Casey Rohl, we'll talk about her in a second, and Michelle Yeoh are in some type of nightclub full of a bunch of Star Trek aliens and all kinds of, you know, interesting-looking nightlife people. And then out the windows, there's swirling nebulas, and it's kind of a, it sounded like a very, like, you know, interesting looking setting. So it's like, okay, that would kind of make sense for, you know, someone like this to show up. But yeah, it is a very bizarre image. I think that's why they chose it, because like it doesn't give much away, but it's also very,
Yeah, I can't draw too much from just a person who looks cybernetic that, you know, that. I don't think it's probably Leland or anything like that.
No, yeah, I don't think they're doing any of the control stuff.
By the way, let me just quick say this, Robbie. Michelle Yeoh, I know there's makeup and Hollywood things and all that sort of stuff, but she looks like she's, I don't know, 30 in that scene.
Yeah.
I believe she's in her 60s.
She's one of the biggest actors in the world. There's an insane amount of money invested in making her face look good. So
yeah. But also, she does have a, just, I think, from her health and all of that, a very naturally very clean skin and beautiful look and all that. So yeah, some of that is her too.
But the Rachel Garrett casting, that was the big interesting thing to me, because I was not expecting them to, and they didn't like confirm this. I mean, this could be like a time displaced Rachel Garrett for all we know, but in all likelihood, that means that the show is going to take place in the quote-unquote lost era, the thing that, like, us Star Trek nerds call that big gap in time between Star Trek VI and Star Trek The Next Generation.
It's a, what is the amount of time that covers?
So that would be from, like, 2291, I believe, until 2364. So it's about what is that, like 73-year gap?
I mean, that is pretty notable. It's funny, I guess because they don't focus on it much, I haven't thought about that much, but I like the idea. I feel like I need to rewatch the episode with her in it because I don't remember her particularly well.
Right. If you don't know who we're talking about, Rachel Garrett, that's from widely considered the best or one of the best episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, Yesterday's Enterprise in season 3. But yeah, it's the episode that brought Tasha Yar back. I guess spoilers for TNG, but they had the Enterprise that predated Picard's Enterprise, the Enterprise C, from the year 2344. That it turns out that it disappeared, but what actually happened is it got sent into the... Or I guess it was destroyed by the Romulans at Narada 3, but what is revealed is that it got sent into the future, and then when they have to send the ship back, Rachel Garrett dies, but they're able to send Tasha back. But I think that the show will probably be... Or I'm sorry, the Section 31 movie will probably take place 10, 20... years before the Enterprise C is lost in 2044. So whenever, the funny thing, Dave, is that I talk about this a lot, but whenever they announce like a new show or movie or something, like what time period they put it in, a big part of me always wants it to be kind of in this lost era we talk about. And I always say, like, you know, the original series was always supposed to take place 300 years ahead. Like, if you're watching the original series, that's basically like the 23rd century's 60s. The right. Harv Bennett movies are like the 23rd century's 80s. You know, right. So it's pretty easy to do the math on those. You just add 300 to whatever year it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Not exact, but it's kind of that general ballpark. But yeah, so do a show that's 300 years from today, that's like 2034. And you could have like anyone from the TOS series or the TOS movies. I know there's not all that many still around, but any of those actors could show up. And then you could recast a lot of Berman era people as like younger people. And then you could also like create original characters just to explore like, oh, what was like early interactions with the Cardassians, like when the Federation and Cardassians first started, like, you know, interacting with one another. We've never explored that. We've never, you know, what like the first few decades of peace with the Klingons, what was that like? You know, there's a lot of interesting stuff here. I guess like teenage Picard might be running around if they did a show in the year 2324, like I'm wanting this to take place. I kind of want them to like stay away from Picard for a little bit. We've got like a lot of Picard recently, but I don't know, maybe I don't know, like what if they went to New Orleans for some reason, and there's like a young version of Joseph Sisko working at the restaurant or something. There's just like a lot of interesting stuff in that early 24th century. They should do something there at some point. There should be shows or movies at some point there. So Section 31, you know, why not? And I also like that, I think that Rachel Garrett's probably going to be like the good guy on the show. Like she'll be like, you need like a good person to balance out Georgiou, you know. They're not gonna like corrupt Rachel Garrett, I think. Like they're gonna need her to still be like the pure captain who's in yesterday's Enterprise. So I think she's gonna be there to kind of be kind of the counterpoint.
Well, we also know though that that Georgiou, even Emperor Georgiou, is quite a different person than she was a few years prior.
Right.
So she's not a villain.
Right. But even the character that she is, I think, is still like too dark to be the
sure.
Like, you need someone who's like I'm all for Star Trek telling other stories that aren't like that aren't Starfleet focused, that bring in like, you know, very different characters. But I think you're going to have like, you're going to need like one Starfleet goody two shoes on. You need one person who's, if nothing else, they're just there to be the face of like the quote unquote Roddenberry values in that universe. That's my thing with like the Khan miniseries. They want to do like this Khan miniseries. I think that's cool, but like you need to have someone in there who's like an actual like Star Trek good guy, like which I think they have with like Marla MacGyvers. I think you know, you just have her be kind of like the good guy in there until her tragic end and whatever. But
let me ask something else, Father, about this. Do they say in that article or anywhere else, do they confirm any that it's a specific time period that, say, the Guardian won't be, like, bouncing her around a little bit in time?
They didn't say that, but I think that's a bad idea. I think that's a hat on a hat. You shouldn't do a Section 31 show and, like, a time travel will go anywhere show. I think those should be two separate premises.
Well, I'm thinking of it more like, you know, this is a movie, not a series, so it's not gonna...
They want to do sequels, though. Michelle Yeoh says that she'll come back for a sequel.
But if they had... You know, I'm thinking of more like how Avengers did Endgame, where there's, you know, not like, oh, we just want to have fun time traveling to all the different eras, but it could be like there's two or three eras that we have to traverse for our story.
Okay, I would be okay with that if they're going to do like a series of Section 31 movies and just be like, this one of our several Section 31 stories we're going to tell, this one is going to be like the timey-wimey one where they're jumping around all over the place, and that's kind of like the novelty of this one. I would be okay with that, you know?
Yeah, the main reason I ask is just because they associated Georgiou with the Guardian of Forever, so...
Right. I think that was just more to, like, get her back to the time period they wanted. And then
I think so.
That was the thing, is like, oh, you're gonna die if you don't get closer to your time period. Mm. So I think the idea is not she's gonna continue to be mobile. I think it's like, I'm gonna send you to a place where you're needed and just, you know...
Plop you there.
Be there, yeah. You're gonna have to thrive where you're planted, or whatever the saying is that racist people use to complain about immigrants. Which I don't endorse, by the way. But if that's all we got on Section 31, Starfleet Academy, they're going to start shooting in late summer. I'm excited by this cool little tidbit. They said that they're building the largest standing set that any Star Trek show has ever used. It's like 47,000 square feet up in Pinewood, Toronto. So it'll be this two-story structure that is going to have a mess hall and an amphitheater and a bunch of different classrooms. So I think they're planning on shooting these, you know, these cool, like, elaborate kind of, like, walk and talk sequences, like, you know, the, like, these kids, like, walking from class to class, or, mm-hmm. or like, professors, like, arguing, or, like, whatever. It's only going to be, like, a cool lived-in set, very much like the Deep Space Nine Promenade, but even bigger. So that sounds cool to me.
A big, broad set that can accommodate a lot. And give the characters, you know, give the actors, you know, as cool as the AR wall is, it has some limitations, and physical objects and that sort of physical interactivity can really, I think, inform an actor's choices and ground things in, you know, in sort of a physical reality. And, you know, Father, you're always talking about, like, how big a special place the Promenade holds in your heart for Deep Space Nine. This, you know, this gives them an opportunity to make some of those kind of Trek memories for people. You know, it's like, oh yeah, you know, this amazing scene in their digital library, in their, you know, in that amphitheater, whatever they've got going on. It's hopefully we'll be in a different, very different way, as cool as the Promenade.
The place needs to be a character. Like, the school should feel like a character. And, like, I want Starfleet Academy to, like the way that the Enterprise and the Defiant and Voyager, like, they kind of feel like characters. The Deep Space Nine station feels like a character in a lot of ways. You know, it's this ugly Cardassian thing, but we still love it. I think they have a cool opportunity here with it being the first Star Trek show set on Earth. And they can kind of just show us, like, normal, not quite civilian culture, it's still going to be very Starfleet, but just a more kind of just, like, lived-in, natural world, you know? Like, less, like, professional, less, like, people, like, at work. More mm-hmm. just people living, I think.
Yeah, you know, you're talking about, like, just, like city streets and shops and, you know, however.
Yeah, or, like, people might be, like, they're at, like, a coffee shop. You know, like, a scene might take place at a coffee shop that normally would take place, like, I don't know, in like, a corridor of a ship. And, you know, just, right. like, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know, like, a ton on this. I don't think we're gonna see it until 2026. So if they're gonna start shooting late this year, it would probably be ready to go in, you know, late next year, the second half of next year. But with Strange New World season 3 coming out next year, I think that they might just, like, hold on this for, like, early 2026.
Yeah, it's a bit of a wait, but we will not be devoid of material.
And it takes them like a little over, like, I don't know, 20 months to turn around a modern season of Star Trek. Mm. So it's kind of hard to do something, like, every year. But a lot of TV shows, I look at, like, what, like, Max is doing with shows like House of the Dragon and what's that zombie mushroom show?
Last of Us.
The Last of Y'all. Like, with those shows, they kind of only do one season every 2 years, and they're upfront about it. They're like, I hope you enjoyed season one. We'll see you in 2 years. So if we're going to have two Star Trek shows, maybe that'll be the format. Maybe we'll have, like, Strange New Worlds 1 year, and then next year is Academy, and the next year is Strange New World. Maybe those, like, alternate back and forth like that. I think that might be, like, the kind of the late winter or early spring release, you know, this time of year, like how they're putting out Discovery now. They like having a show around this time of year. Mm. So I think they might just, you know, and then do Lower Decks or something else in the fall.
I'm a pretty patient viewer. This stuff is usually okay by me. Yeah. But 2 years is, I mean, that's a bit of a stretch between seasons.
But you'll have, like, another Star Trek show in between. So.
I know, but I'm going to forget the other one. I don't remember anything about why.
2 years between Disco season 4 and Disco season 5.
I'm rewatching Disco season 4 because I don't remember anything that happened in it.
Well, I guess I rewatch Star Trek all the time anyways, so
it's percolating more in your brain.
But we do need to move on to our main topic of the top 3 things we want to see and the one thing we don't want to see in the final season of Disco. But just before we do that, the last thing we're going to cover from the big variety news. But the theatrical releases, I don't want to talk about this too long, because whenever I bring up the theatrical movies, y'all all yell at me that, like, I don't believe that they're actually making a theatrical movie. I'll believe it when I see the trailer for it. So, okay, I won't talk about this much, but they did list in the Variety article, they did list pretty much, like, every failed attempt at a 14th Star Trek movie, mm-hmm. from, like, the Quentin Tarantino thing to everything else. They did mention it, interesting to me, no one else picked up on it, I guess, but Kalinda Vasquez, who wrote one of the short treks that I liked, and I was excited when she was announced to write a Star Trek movie a few years ago. They said, like, that thing is still, you know, on the table. It might happen. They're doing, like, non-Kelvin-y movies. The Toby Haynes, Seth Graham Smith prequel movie that I got excited about not that long ago, the Andor director, who also did the Trek episode of Black Mirror and ton of other sci-fi things like Doctor Who, but I'm super excited for Toby Haynes to do a Trek movie. And it sounds like that prequel, it's going to be like so much of a prequel, it's before the Kelvin timeline divergence. I think it's actually going to be like Romulan War or something like around like kind of like Enterprise 22nd century. They're talking about it more as kind of an origin story for the entire franchise. So, and it'll be in the main timeline. And also, I think, kind of a prequel to the Kelvin movies because of where they're going to set it. I'm super hyped for that. And they said that it is moving along to start pre-production this year. And it'll probably come out before the next Kelvin movie that we never know when it's going to come out. So I think this might be on track to come out in 2026. And we're going to have the 14th Star Trek film out for the 60th anniversary. That does seem to be when they get their shit together with the movies. You know, they don't typically miss the big anniversaries. They ever since, I guess, Star Trek IV. Pretty popular movie, came out on the 20th anniversary in 1986, and then, you know, they finished off the original series saga with Star Trek VI in 91 for the 25th anniversary, and, you know, First Contact for the 30th, you know, 40th, they didn't have anything going on, but, you know, 50th, they got Beyond out for the 50th, so I think, you know, they like that, whatever type of marketing opportunity that gives a studio, like, it's enough that it seems like, oh, well, you know, they don't skip those. I think that might be our best hope for another theatrical film is going to be the Toby Haynes directed prequel in 2026.
Father, in the comments, Jill was asking, what was the short Trek that you liked?
This one that she wrote, it's, I'm trying to think what it's called. Is it Ask Not? But it's the one where with Pike and the engineer girl who thought the Tholians killed her husband, but they didn't.
Right on.
That it was like one that like you and I both were like, oh yeah, this is kind of like a simple little story, but you know, it's like it was a short Trek that we actually like and we don't have anything to complain about. Starfleet is very mean with like their psychological pranks that they do to test people. It's kind of a tradition, but
it's their MK Ultra.
But they did confirm in Variety that Steve Yockey is writing what they keep calling it now the final, you know, Kelvin, the final movie of like Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto and Carl Urban and Zoe Saldana and the rest of them. I don't know if I need a fourth and final Kelvin movie. I don't know if I need like all those actors to show up again and be like, hey, we're not like the young versions of those characters anymore. We're kind of older than they were in the original series, but here's one last adventure for us. You know, but I wish them good luck. I hope that movie gets made for the people who want it, and I hope it's good, and I hope I like it too. But that's not a big concern for me. But I guess Steve Yockey, currently the guy assigned to write that movie. And I don't know if Dave has a thought on that or not.
No strong thoughts because, you know, these movies do seem so ephemeral as possibilities. But I made my peace and found some love for the Beyond, for the Kelvin movies. And I think Beyond works pretty well as a capper. But I personally would like to see them, do another Kelvin verse cast movie. So I'm for it. I also think, even though they say final, you know, if 10 years go by and those actors aren't getting the roles that they want, I bet they might consider returning to that franchise, even as Paramount starts eyeing who they would get to play a cast of Next Generation remakes.
But the Star Trek fans, something this article talks about a lot is that, you know, the fan base is very loyal. And even though it's not like as big of a fan base as, say, Star Wars or Marvel, you know, it might be more dedicated, and they talk like they kind of talk about how like it's very important to the franchise, it seems, to satisfy that loyal fan base, but also constantly search for fresh blood because we're getting old.
Yeah, Frakes is pretty upfront about that in the article. They've certainly been with Lower Decks and Prodigy. They've been doing very sincere and quality outreach to the youth.
Well, hopefully it's landing.
But. Yeah, I don't have the best sense of it, but those shows are not dead yet, and Lower Decks is still going.
Yeah, and it's still unknown. This might be the final season of Lower Decks. We might get another. Mike McMahon says he kind of wants to do 7, so I think it'd be good. I think it'd be good to renew. What I'm talking about with like the only show one live action show a year, I think that would work really well with like Lower Decks to get renewed for like a 6th and 7th season. Because, you know, we could have either Strange New Worlds or Academy in the spring. I know you said, like, you're going to forget about it if we have to wait 2 years. But
I'm exaggerating a little
bit. Right. Also, with these made-for-streaming movies, they want to keep going after Section 31. Alex Kurtzman says they want to do the Picard follow-up. There's, you know, do something like 7 of 9 on the Enterprise G. So we have two big Star Trek holidays on the calendar, you know, with First Contact Day coming up soon, April 5th, and then Star Trek Day, September 8th. I say why not put out a made-for-streaming movie on Star Trek Day and on First Contact Day. Give us something new and give us a sequel to one of the previous ones. Let's do two a year like that. I think that would be fun. I think that's a great way to get more content out there. And then, yeah, we'll get these theatrical movies whenever we get them. But, you know, they can do made-for-streaming movies a lot cheaper and a lot quicker. So I say, you know, if the Section 31 thing works, if they do like a Picard follow-up and it works, let's keep doing that. Star Trek doesn't need a big Hollywood budget to tell a good Star Trek story. You know, it famously works better on TV budgets, we often talk about, than on the big movie budgets. So
it's true.
But that's all I got on that stuff. So let's get to our big topic, our fun topic. The top three things we want in this final season of Discovery, and then the one thing we don't.
And maybe we're going to like pepper in a few little small...
Yeah, we got some honorable mentions.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess we'll start with, well, I don't know. Sometimes I do this, and I think Dave will have listed them with, like, the top one at the front. But then sometimes we show up, and he's like, oh, I didn't put them in order.
Mine aren't in any special order, but I think there's the final one, I think. There's, okay. The last one I know is, I know which one I want to go last.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go with the one that I guess is, like, the least important to me first, and then okay. Work my way up. But yeah, let's start, I guess, with some of the things that we want. I don't know. Who should go first?
You should go first, Fathery.
Okay, well, the number three thing that I want in the final season of Star Trek Discovery, which, by the way, as we're listing, I'd be curious to hear not only what people think about the things on our list, but also tell us some of the things that you're hoping to see if you're watching live in the live audience. But my number three would be, I want good use of the established recurring characters that they've set up in this 32nd century, and specifically Admiral Vance. I was very nervous when they started putting out trailers for season 5 and Vance was nowhere to be seen. Just after I've rewatched some season 3 too and season 4. It's like, oh yeah, Admiral Vance does add a lot to the show. I think he's a lot of fun to have, but they kind of already erased a couple of those Starfleet HQ people. You know, in season 3 we had that hologram Eli. We haven't seen him since season 3. And there's also Lieutenant Willa was the chief of security. She's kind of like an assistant to Vance. And we just see her very briefly at like the very beginning of season 4. And then she's vanished. So it's like, I don't want that to happen to Vance. But as I was making this list and kind of putting my notes together last night, it also occurred to me that, there's a lot of good season 4 recurring characters. You know, President Rillick, I think, added to the show. General Nadoye on Earth. I'm hoping that you know, I don't know if I necessarily, like, need to see Rillick, but I would like someone to mention her. Like, let me know, like, what she's up to. And I guess just rewatching season 3 recently and, like, seeing how much Eli and Willa are in all those HQ scenes, and then they just, like, vanished. So I'm like, oh, no, please don't do that. Please don't do that to Vance in season 5 or anyone else.
We've seen his character deepen, too. We saw his family in the last season, and we've seen how he will kind of, in a lot of ways, he is the sort of support you want, who will sometimes pull some strings, like, didn't he do the thing where he's like, oh, I'm sick, I can't be at the meeting, Burnham, could you go for me? Wasn't that him?
Oh, yeah, on Navarre.
Yeah.
And that final, I guess, episode of season 4 when him and Tilly are trying to save people on Earth. And it's like, you get kind of invested in that because, you know, we care about Tilly, but we also really care about Vance. And when, like, the two of them think they might be facing death and they're just, like, drinking the whiskey and trying to comfort each other, it's like, yeah, like, of course we love Tilly. We've been in love with her since season 1, hashtag silly for Tilly. But also, like, Vance has really, like, landed with the audience. And, you know, the writers clearly picked up on that. They wrote that scene. They constructed that knowing that we care about the character.
Yeah, I can back you on that one, Father. It's not on my list, but I've liked Vance, you know, who initially, of course, they, like everybody in power, they dangled a little bit of bad moral fears, but he pretty quickly turned out to be a stand-up guy, and yeah, it feels like he should, in general, be a voice that you hear from at least semi-regularly.
And to this day, I don't know if he's been in a single, like, TV spot or anything for season 5. So I haven't seen any promotional material that I recall that showed him. So that which originally stood out as kind of weird to me. So I don't know if that made anyone else nervous, but it definitely made me concerned. But what about you? Give us something from your list of what you want to see in the final season of Disco.
Okay, Father, here's a similar sort of thing that's a little bit of a through line from the past season. I'd like to see some... I know it's not going to be like a major component, but I would like to see some sort of fallout from encountering the 10 sea aliens. I'd like to see how the first contact has been proceeding, second contact and everything else. I'd like to know, you know, how their amends are going or, you know, what they're up to and you know, how well they've grasped, the sentient races of the galaxy and they're in, and you know, what, how they're interacting with them. After, oops, their Boronite mining accidentally killed a bunch of them. I want to see, I think it'd be interesting if the alliance with them had some sort of benefit at some point during the season. So you see the value of this sort of alliance building with somebody who's far beyond you, you know, like, oh no, we need to get to the other side of the galaxy in, you know, one day and there's no way to do that. Oh, but our friends, the 10 Sea, could help us out. And likewise, I think that if they wanted to, I doubt that they will go this deep, but that they could be, you could go a little intriguey with them where the Federation might be like almost seen as, they might be seen as a political liability for them. Like, yeah, you stopped them, but you're cozying up to people who did kill, you know, inadvertently killed what, billions?
Yeah.
And I think it'd be interesting if, like, maybe as, like, a side threat in there, if there was, like, a, you know, maybe a movement or something, you know, a radicalized movement that was like, hey, we are still not happy with this.
Like,
and, you know,
like, instead of people being racist against mutants and X-Men, you have, like, the 10 Sea haters.
Yeah. You know, I feel like given the Holocaust-ish level destruction that they caused, that it... You know, the idea of people who are, like, so moved and terrified of them still, you know, being out there and you know, getting together is not at all, wouldn't be unusual. Mm. So yes, but even if it's just to say things are going along well and they're, you know, they've helped us with this problem or that problem, or they've built new Quajon or something, whatever.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that, something like that. I mean, that seems like within their power levels.
Maybe they're working with Book. Maybe Book is teamed up with them in his community service.
Yeah. I would be down for that kind of thing. I was just thinking, they figured out how to get through the galactic barrier, what they needed to do that so they could meet the 10 Sea in last season. Is it repeatable? Is that something that they could do on the regular?
Yeah, but there's not like a ton to like go out there for. But
well, there's a lot of other galaxies out there.
But they can't spore. I think they said that the spore drive can't go to other galaxies.
That's too bad. But like it would open it up for like Star Trek level. I mean, you know, there's cues and things out there, and maybe there's super wormholes and or a wormhole to another galaxy. Like I think it'd be interesting to. I don't expect it to see it this season, but just as a kind of an aside, I think it'd be interesting if they started opening up, seeing a few other bits outside the galaxy.
That's interesting.
But anyway, so yeah, that's my first one is fallout from the 10 Sea stuff.
I would like to see like the 10 Sea mentioned, maybe. Mm-hmm. That was such a focus of season 4. I don't want them to spend too much of these final 10 episodes of Discovery on 10 Sea stuff after season 4. So if it is more a bigger flavoring thing than
an arc.
I it would have to be something like good. Like I'd have to like really like whatever they do with it.
You're like, you've got enough of these guys? But here's the thing, they also, when it's so big that you spent the whole season building up to it, it's kind of weird if you then...
I would mention it.
If they're not mentioned. In the same way, I still think it was weird that the events of Picard season 2 and Jurati the Borg Queen were not even mentioned really.
They were mentioned like twice in season 3.
I mean, like in the tiniest of ways. But like somebody should have said...
Yeah, that's what I would do with like 10 Sea. I would only mention it like once or twice in the whole season. And then I wouldn't want it to be like lingering. That would frustrate me.
What if the 10 Sea are like... helping, like, not necessarily, like, here's our technology.
It would have to be really good, because I don't want to spend more screen time with, like, the giant... I want to see Locke and Maul. I want to see some of the new mystery stuff they're doing. I'd rather see something different.
It's not binary, though. Like, it's not like they either are doing still more old 10 Sea stuff or new stuff. I'm saying they could be pursuing whatever treasure thing they're pursuing, and the 10 Sea, something from their alliance with them could help them out. Okay. And
I think it'd be cooler if it was something else. I would use something that we didn't spend all of season four focused on.
Okay.
That's all just right. Me. For my number two thing I want to see in the final season of Disco, I think this is a fun one. I want to see a romantic, happily ever after. For some couple, or it doesn't even have to be a couple, for a thruple, I don't know. There's I guess there aren't any established thruples on there. But some pairing, I don't know if Saru and Tarina, maybe, or Book and Burnham, maybe, or I'd really like to see more stuff of Adira and Gray. But I think it would be a lot of fun just to, you know, we haven't had like a Star Trek wedding in a while, have we? Characters, like known characters that we like, and we watched them like fall in love, kind of watch like the whole relationship. So
yeah, I was going to say it's time,
we're due for one.
Even though the series is ending, and this may be it for Discovery. You know, they're probably not going to get a movie, and
Will they get like a made for streaming movie?
But they could,
pretty likely.
So it'd be hard to like
pretty plausible.
A full happily ever after is kind of impossible because you can always do a follow-up story, but you can kind of give a sense of resolution or some characters have entered a new chapter of their life.
Well,
like
what
Gray
I mean by like
Adira.
Romantically, like by a romantic happily ever after, like it doesn't necessarily like have to be marriage, but I just want to get like the sense like people like rode off in the sunset together and like they were good. They were set. Maybe they get married and have kids. Maybe we show like some like, I don't know, like a flash forward of a bunch of like half Kelpie and half Vulcan children playing at Saru's feet or something. Or I don't know what they do, but I think that there's been like enough romance in the air in Disco. And that might be a theme of season five with our season villains, our big bads.
Yeah,
Laoc being a romantic pairing.
Yeah, it depends on whether they make them very villainous or more of a mixed villainous thing will kind of color the results. But I think I could be interested in either. Like they don't have to be good people for me to be invested in their romance. But a lot of times love is seen as something that brings some dimensionality and some a humanity to people who otherwise might not have it. And if that's a thing that they're doing with them, I'd be down for it.
I'm really fascinated with the characters Buffy and Drusilla on Buffy in like season two of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Long
you
time ago.
You said Buffy
like,
and Drusilla. Do you mean?
I mean Spike and Drusilla.
Spike and Drusilla.
Back in like 1998, but they were like these pretty like nasty bad guys, and they were kind of just like these I don't know like these stupid shitheads that just like showed up to be assholes. But they were like so in love with one another, and they had just great chemistry like on screen and. They were fun to watch, so.
Well, I mean, Cersei and Jaime had pretty good chemistry, too. Yeah. I mean, those are pretty interesting characters to watch.
That was a bit more disturbing, but we don't need to go into the
I was just
why.
Saying there's you could even push those limits.
Akiva Goldsman liked it because that's how he wanted his Romulans to be in Picard season one, but.
All right.
Because apparently that was his grandparents were siblings.
Oh, interesting.
Wow. That's what Akiva Goldsman says that in the Picard season one Blu-ray. So I'm just repeating what he said. But yeah, I don't know. I would like a romantically happily ever after for somebody, preferably like not siblings. But bring Giorgio back into the 32nd century and let her and Linus ride off together. Remember when they were kind of flirty in season three? But. Dave, what about you? What's something else from your list you want to see in the final season?
So it's funny, we were just talking about Starfleet Academy, and in season three they had a bit of their test drive for it. They had the survivalist run with Tilly on that ice planet and with the students trying to bring them together. Since we are not likely to actually see Starfleet Academy until 2026, I would like a more serious run at Starfleet Academy. Worked into the show's premise, into the premise of the season, I should say. But I'd like to see, even if it's like maybe, I don't know if they have the Academy actually already built in, is it San Francisco? Yeah. Or what, but
they're building it. The set will be in Toronto, but they said the Golden Gate Bridge is viewable from the thing that they're building. So I guess the Academy will be back in San Francisco.
Right. But what I mean is like in story, is it built yet? Like in for those characters in fiction, they got to be training these people. I mean, they've had Starfleet running for, it hasn't stopped running.
Right, but the Academy has not existed.
Right. But there has to be some place where they train people.
Right. They just didn't have like a central academy, you know, sure. Like it's kind of like on the job training, I guess, is what they were doing for everyone.
So yes, what I'd like to see is some, I guess a midway point training thing with like Tilly and some students and a glimpse of what, like of a hint of what we're going to see, a cool get folks pumped for the new series, little glimpse of the kind of things you could do on it. And I think it'd be cool. It's like, if it's one of those things where it's like, whatever in this treasure hunt, if there's something where they're like, we need research on this, we need people beyond even the ship. And Tilly's like, oh, well, I've got like a really amazing team of linguistic students or mathematicians or, you know, physicists or whatever. Let us take a crack at it. And so maybe we get some field experience for the kids too, for the cadets. But basically, I want like a more thorough dry run for Starfleet Academy, a preview, and honestly, a hype for it. But it would be worked into the treasure hunt storyline.
Yeah, that'd be cool if they have time to do that.
I mean, I know it's 10 episodes.
They were already like convinced they're doing the Academy show before production started on season 5. So I don't think they probably would have thought they needed that as like a proof of concept. But maybe just to help set up something. Or maybe, well, just to introduce something that they're going to use later. I think
sure.
Mary Wiseman's been vocal in the promotion for the final season, talking about how her character Tilly is going to be focused on teachery things and on her students.
Mm-hmm.
And so they still have not confirmed that she's in the Academy show, but I think it's pretty good chances, and it's also a pretty good chance that she's going to be the lead. That's at least what I'm hoping.
Mm-hmm.
They just let Mary Wiseman carry the show. I think her maybe balanced out with someone who's kind of different, like maybe her and then like a straight man type of character to be a bit of a foil.
Somebody who's like by the book, or
yeah, or just someone who kind of will balance her out. You think about like the lead of a show, like all the things that like they'll have to do, and just like, okay, the things that like this character played by this actor like wouldn't be great. Like what would we need? So
sure, yeah, Tilly seems like a person who works best in some ways alongside someone, with Saru, with Michael, et cetera, et
yeah.
cetera.
You would need like a proxy Saru or Michael or whoever.
I don't think that's gonna.
But I don't know. Like it sounds like they've already cast like some of the show. It's just some of the adults. So that Kurtzman was saying, like, you know, we're still casting some of the kids. It's like, oh, so you've already cast some of the teachers, is what that means.
Right. So I will point out, by the way, as far as like, can you fit it in the 10 episodes? The previous season did have like, you know, a side episode about a prison, a side episode about a, you know, going to a gambling den to get some information and tech. So, you know, you can do these things.
Yeah, it had more episodes, but I would be open for exploring some of that Academy stuff, or like laying the grounds for it. You know, the interesting thing, they can't develop it too much, because the way that they described that show is like, this is going to be kind of like, all these kids are so like, there hasn't been a Starfleet Academy for so long, and they're kind of like the first class to go through this new school. So, but you know, you got to think like, well, in the preparation for that, there's got to be a lot of stuff happening, you know? So.
Sure. Even honestly, if it was her working with, you know, the cadets that are not like, you know, are not going to have the Academy, and maybe show in a way that these are great kids, these are really promising Starfleet material, but because they grew up in the burn, because they grew up without an Academy, maybe almost even like show why they need an Academy, like they should show some of the limitations that they've had as far as group bonding and all of that stuff, and you know, you sort of emphasize why that Academy is needed. Now, that was to some degree done in the previous one too.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, I think I believe in writers finding these kind of interesting paths.
And just on that note of what they did with All Is Possible, the season 4 cadet episode.
Mm-hmm.
But something they talk about a lot is like, these kids don't know anything about Starfleet, about the Federation. They've never heard of Red Alert before. They've never met other people from different planets, because, you know, there's been so little travel post burn. And so it's going to be very new audience friendly. It's going to be very good for like explaining Star Trek concepts. You're literally going to have like kids in school being taught all this stuff. So it sounds extremely similar to Prodigy, which I might not, you know, get a season 3. We still don't know when season 2 is going to come out outside of France, but hopefully sometime soon. But, you know, if that show, I'm not saying like I want it to go away. I desperately hope Prodigy gets a season 3, because I think it has a lot of untapped potential, and I'm psyched. I'm so psyched for 20 more episodes. Like, the amount of Prodigy in our life is about to double. That is exciting as hell. That's like guaranteed. Like, we're gonna get that's the bare minimum that we're gonna get. But if that is it for Prodigy, then I, you know, why not let the Academy be the, we're gonna do the Star Trek 101 then for the new audience. So, okay, sure, let someone else take up that mantle. So if they want to practice that in some disco episode in season 5, they want to do some trial runs of that stuff, I'm for it.
You know, with this being a 10 episode season for season 5, is that right?
Yes, sir.
So we're essentially, when we do get Prodigy, we'll essentially get double this. It is like getting two,
but they're half as
seasons.
Long
seasons. I mean, they're still full stories.
People talk faster, so
and they're full stories. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That'll be exciting. And who knows? That might be in May. We might have Prodigy and Disco coming out at the same time in a few.
It's a lot of stuff, but yes, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that'll be cool. That'll be cool and difficult. So I guess, what are we on now? Are we on? Are we ready for like the?
I think we're on
big
ones? our number one pick.
The number ones. Okay, so we're gonna do number ones. Then we're gonna do the thing that we don't want. But then we'll end on some honorable mentions.
Yeah, yeah. I think I've got some very fun ones.
Okay, so the number one thing I want more than anything else in Star Trek Discovery season 5, the final season. I want to like season 5 more than season 4. I want this to be the best season of Star Trek Discovery. I want it to be my favorite season of Star Trek Discovery. I don't think Star Trek Discovery has reached its potential yet. I think 4 was an improvement over the first 3 seasons, but I think it can do even better. And do I dare hope for it? I guess I do, because it made number 1 on my list. But, you know, why not? Reasonable expectations are for suckers. I say dream your big dreams. And hope for your big hopes. So I hope this is the best season of Star Trek Discovery ever. That's kind of a cheater thing, because I guess I would actually want that for like any season of any Star Trek show. I could say that like going in, but sure. But I especially mean that now, knowing that this will be the final season.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is like you never know from like the premise or anything whether something has that ability. Like every season, I think that I've heard the premise, the bare bones premise of Star Trek Discovery has sounded intriguing, and some come off better than others. Like when they describe this thing where they're kind of all chasing after something like the Ark of the Covenant in Raiders of the Lost Ark, it's, you know, I'm like, well, you know, like how do you lend depth to that? How does that any, you know, you don't want the mystery box. How do you have that depth? And, but like, well, they found it. Like, they did that with the 10C. There's absolutely the possibility of doing that. So, yeah, it could live up. That would be great to go out on such a cool note. And they've had five... Every season, at least, has the potential to have seen the mistakes and triumphs of the past and build on it. And, Father E, for you, fourth season was the best.
Yeah.
And so they have that within their scope of experience. So, yeah. Solid shot.
And I guess more specifically, but it sounds like the formula that they're going with for season 5, and now that I've seen like a little bit of it, I guess, mm-hmm. I made this list before seeing any of right. season 5, but after seeing the first episode and getting a better idea of like the story that they're telling in season 5, I think it is possible that, yeah, I am going to like it more than anything else. You know, it seems a little bit more likely now. I guess like the big thing that I liked in season 4 was like the confidence that it acquired when it learned like, okay, I can slow down a little bit. I don't have to be like big and flashy. I can be like, hey, you know what? I'm Star Trek. We're just going to have a talky debate in the Starfleet Council chamber right now. Or we're going to have like a debate on this, you know, sentient computer's rights to exist in control of this entire ship. Or we're going to have... the Vulcan scientist talking about like the 10C. It just felt like it had like more like those slower, talkier moments. And so if they can like keep that maturity and then blend that in with more of like the fast paced, flashy, admittedly often fun action adventure stuff that they keep talking about, you know, that they're doing in season 5, then I think that actually would be ideal to show the strengths of Star Trek Discovery and make the best season of the show ever.
Right on. Yeah, that's, you know, even in that episode, the examples, is that what they called it?
The prison one.
Yeah, they had some time there to talk about you know, incarceration and things like that, and different, you know, retrying them, and you know, that little bit of a deeper dive. So yeah, that is again within their experience. Yeah, here's hoping that the adventure action adventure season has room for that too.
Well, what about you, Dave? What's the top thing that you want to see in these last 10 episodes we're ever going to get of Star Trek Discovery?
All right, this is kind of a high concept answer. So I want the show to, we know the premise. We know there's this sort of the treasure hunt thing going on. Kovich in that last trailer said he's the greatest treasure in the known galaxy. And someone else said it could be dangerous in the wrong hands. So what I want is for the show to live up to its name of Discovery and give us a true discovery related to what they find. And I mean like something that feels like a satisfying reveal that like pushes Trek lore forward or something like that. So that it's not just, I know that it's not just going to be a MacGuffin, or I don't think it'll be. I think they are kind of past the mystery box sort of draw. But I was thinking about things that they've brought up in some of the mysteries of Star Trek. So you're talking about like the Guardian of Forever, or the Doomsday Machine, or those conspiracy bugs from TNG. And I was like, oh, you know, I would like it to draw in something like that and build a bit of Trek lore. Have them discover something that will add to Trek lore in a notable way.
It's something that like other people will want to like use and reference. Like the Mycelium Network has never been, no other Star Trek show has ever wanted to use that. Like the tardigrades can travel all across space through a secret mushroom network.
Right. They've done stuff that, you know, must appear in canonical lore now. You can't say the burn didn't happen. I don't think anybody is going to undo any of that. They are going to build on it kind of whether they like it or not. But I think, because they specifically structured it around the finding of one thing, which arguably the 10C were kind of like that too. Mm. And the 10C did add to the lore, but like if it's possible to then, you know, it's possible we may never hear from the 10C again. That may have been it. And the discovery of them was their story. I'd like something that builds on the lore. I would like that some discovery made. I don't suppose it necessarily has to be something that gets referenced all the time in the future, but I think it'd be neat if the team, you know, their self-discovery is also like a big part of the show.
I know that's
going to happen. I have like zero doubt that will happen because that's what they do and that's what they're good at, actually.
That makes me excited because I think like a big theme of the final season will be like people discovering like who they really are. Kind of like Burnham making it to the captain's chair.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, that's actually the most important thing is the people finding that. But I do think, I just think it would be neat if they actually did discover something that has something to do with one of these Trek things like that.
Well, I think I don't know, I think there's something, now that we've seen the first episode, I think there's something,
I don't want to say too much, but yes, I feel like it is possible that this one may, more than the others, maybe seems a little more likely to get fulfilled.
I don't even think you're thinking of the thing I'm thinking of.
Oh, okay, then maybe not.
But what I'm thinking of, like, something specific with, like, the character Stamets. But that is, like, another thing that Michelle Paradise has talked about, like, with Season 5 is kind of, like, getting characters, like, where, you know, the places they were always meant to be. And I think it largely informed their decision to end the show, because it sounds like after they made Season 5, they looked at it and they were like, shit, this would be, like, a really good season to go out on. So then when they were like, okay, we can only have two shows, we got Picard ending, and then we have Strange New Worlds, this Academy show, and Discovery. What are we going to do? We can only do two. Do we keep anything? Do we do this Academy show? I think they were like, well, shit, this is like a great ending for Discovery. Let's just like shoot like a little tag on the end to tie it all together, and then, you know, greenlight the Academy show. We got like our good ending. So it sounds like it was kind of like it felt like an informed choice. And I'm excited to see, well, where do these people end? If this is going to be like the ends of their stories, you know, I want to see like their final form, you know, the Dragon Ball Z meme.
We need it to be like an old 80s movie where they do the freeze frames on the character at the end with a little text, you know, like Saru went on to, you know, found, you know, The
awkward one
Science
in
Academy.
American Graffiti. I don't want to spoil it for anyone who's never seen American Graffiti, but there's it was pretty awkward when it said the endings there.
Oh, interesting. But I've never seen American Graffiti.
Okay.
But yes, there's, you know, I actually, Miyazaki, sometimes in his some of his animated movies, at least some of the maybe earlier ones, I don't know if he's still doing it.
He's the Studio Ghibli director, right?
Yeah, yeah. He would, over the credits, show just like little vignettes of the characters, clearly in the weeks and months following the climactic scene. And you would get little glimpses, and I've seen this in other movies too. So you get little glimpses of their life after things have happened. If they were able to shoot something like that, or just give us some hints like that of where these people have landed, I think that'd be really cool.
Well, so those are the things we most want to see. So let's, I guess like our worries, our concerns.
Let's roll out the warning.
Yeah. So the things that we're hoping that they avoid in the final season.
Yum, yum.
You know, a lot of people really like Nan. They were excited when she showed back up in season 4. I remember that a lot of people were very happy.
She was very chill in that season. She had grown.
But I guess the thing that I'm hoping I don't see in the final season of Discovery, what I hope that we don't get in these last 10 episodes, but I really don't want Discovery to backpedal from the progressive representation. I almost said aggressive representation, which might be how some people feel when they're like, oh no, like a non-binary character in my Star Trek show. Ah, like some people I guess like do feel like assaulted by that. It's like, oh no, like people on TV are using they them pronouns. Oh no. But it's but no, like I don't want Disco to back down. I've talked on the show before about how, you know, Berman era Star Trek, I think, dropped the ball on representation, specifically LGBTQ representation. I mentioned on the show recently that it was kind of embarrassing in the UPN days when on the same network, you know, speaking of Buffy, on Buffy, they could have like, oh, look, Buffy's best friend Willow is a full on lesbian and she's in these same sex relationships. But, you know, we can't have like even like a gay background character on Star Trek Enterprise. It was like a little embarrassing. It was awkward. People would like talk about it on the internet and be like, you know, why won't they do this on Enterprise? And you get like the backlash where people be like, no, I don't want like gay people in Star Trek. And there was like an appetite. Like I could see it as just kind of like a teenager just like watching this, just kind of observing. But I could see like, there was a segment of the fandom that really wanted that representation. And well, I'm so glad they finally got it.
Yeah, you had to look to allegory and symbolic representation prior to that. Like, oh, well, Data doesn't fit in. I feel some kinship with him. But like, yes, they couldn't just fucking show it. And until Discovery finally really crossed that barrier.
It wasn't until Kolber and Stamets that we saw like two men kiss each other. Yeah. Star Trek, like that shouldn't have taken that long. But I feel like Discovery, I don't want to say like made up for it, but Discovery started like doing things right. And Discovery started like getting like a lot of praise. Star Trek should get praise for representation. MLK praised Star Trek back in the 60s for you know, showing Nichelle Nichols as like a positive representation of African Americans in the future. I think that that's like the bare minimum Star Trek needs to be doing that. But Discovery is doing it now, and I don't want them to backpedal on the final season. There's with some of the other shows recently with like Picard and Strange New Worlds, they've kind of gotten away from the more diverse casts. And I'm hoping, I guess kind of on my litmus test for this is going to be with like Adira and Gray. I'm hoping that like a Gray doesn't get erased either. I want to see more stuff with them. And I would like to see Discovery push forward for more representation in this final season. So,
yeah. And I guess there's still that raises again the question of, is there time? Will the frenetic, potentially very action-packed season? I mean, Sinequa Martin-Green was on that Ready Room preview of it, and she said, you know, she confirmed what everybody already kind of knew, that there's a big action-adventure season. Like, will they have time for those characters? And, like, I feel it's almost impossible that they won't have Stamets and Kolber pretty strongly represented. But, yeah, Gray and Adira could get sidelined, and they could sort of lose sight of it. But I don't think they will.
I'm hoping they don't. That's what I hope does not happen. So that's my worry. And I guess I'll find out within a few weeks if it happens or not. But I don't know, Dave. What's worrying you? What are you concerned about going into the final season?
All right. So my big concern is I'm going to focus on the action adventure thing that they've brought up. And that there was an early trailer that showed sort of the extended sequence with Burnham on the hull of the ship, and I didn't like it. And I in context, in the actual episode, and also kind of knowing that that was making my peace that that was kind of the vibe of the season, I warmed to it more. But here's what I don't want. I don't want the action to be just like amusement park action. I want the action to have like sort of sometimes consequences. I don't need it to, there can be fun action adventure too, but I don't want it that sort of amusement park action where it just seems like the hero's getting lucky and people keep missing them with attacks and it's just kind of just fun and it doesn't feel like there's any weight. So I look to like my, I still think in many ways a gold standard for action adventure is Raiders of the Lost Ark. And, you know, say a scene like the one where Indiana Jones goes after that Nazi convoy on horseback. And he's got to, like, make his way up from one car to the next and eventually get that the truck that has the Ark in it. And he's fighting guys. And he's going through the ringer. And he gets little victories here and there. But then he's, like, looks like he's going to lose again. And then he looks like he's going to win. And so you feel like you're in the moment and never thinking it's just some breezy funhouse ride. I'm a little worried because Discovery has sometimes done the funhouse ride thing. There's going to be too many of those sequences. And I want my action sequences to again, have a little bit of weight to them, or at least put me in that moment and make me think the character could get really kind of hurt or there'll be a big consequence.
So you don't want like weightless action.
Right. Sometimes Michael Bay does that. Mm. Sometimes I've mentioned the Hobbit movies had a lot of overly long action sequences that were just kind of exhausting.
Yeah, it feels like you're watching someone play a video game and not like people in jeopardy, people in danger.
I feel like was it season two that had the big fight with Burnham in the turbo lift? Burnham fighting that lady. Was that season two?
I think you're thinking of her fighting Ensign Connor in season one in the Mirror Universe.
No, this was the one. What was the one that had the, like, the wild internal shots of
that was, the... That was Book fighting one of the Regulators.
Maybe that was it.
Zara, the sub-boss, the mini-boss. You're thinking that, of... But Burnham fought Osyra in that same episode.
Okay, I think I'm thinking of the Burnham-Osyra fight. And that was not a bad fight.
But that's not like the crazy turbo lifts with, like, the massive caverns. That was... Right. They would, like, cut back and forth from Book and Zara, I think was his name, fighting in the turbo lift, and then we cut to Burnham and Osyra fighting at the computer core.
Yeah, sometimes things feel too much like a set piece sequence, and you know, so I don't want
the big budget action. You want them to rein it in a little bit.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
So you're gonna become an advocate of like, yeah, they need to make a Star Trek movies on Paramount Plus, and that needs to be like a higher priority than movies in the theater.
I mean, sort of. You know, those later Pirates of the Caribbean movies, you know, were just, you know, had like very creative and outrageous action sequences, but you know, in a weird way, they were kind of boring because that you weren't worried about Jack. Whatever.
I don't think I saw the later ones. I don't know what happens after.
You'll
after
have to trust
three.
Me on this one. Weird.
It sounds like I'm not missing much though.
Jackie Chan level kind of stunt work and goofiness, but it was just, you know, you could tell like here comes like a 15 minute action scene. I Discovery has had a foot in that before, and so I'm just hoping that in their action adventure thing that they have some consequences and some real stakes. And again, now that I've seen the first episode, there is, without giving anything away, I feel like they had some seriousness that they took with some of their big sequences in it. So I feel a little bit better about that. But I still think the Burnham thing with the ship might be a little much.
Because she's not taking it serious enough when she's like, I have a saxophone lesson later today. Can we move this on? And instead of being like, oh my God, I'm flying at warp speed. I could die at any second. You know, it's like, which is probably a bit more of a realistic reaction if you think about it. So,
right. I don't need hard realism. I don't need, you know, like what would be a Michael Mann.
Yeah, there's a balance there that like,
there's a balance. Yeah.
I agree with you. Like they didn't quite hit it in that scene. So. That's a reasonable concern to have, I think, given the show's history.
So there you go. Those are our core picks, our big top three, and our big no.
We have some fun runner ups that didn't quite make our lists. I think I also had things I would like to see, but more non Federation world building. Like what's going on, like other than the Federation, or like the worlds they're trying to recruit into the Federation. It's like okay, there's kind of like that Federation. Sector, but like beyond you're not sector like in terms of space, but like that, you know, like Federation zone, that Federation area, you know, mm-hmm. like the Federation and then like the worlds they're friendly with. But who are the other superpowers? I want to, like, know some of that stuff.
Like, are you interested in, like, who stuck it out? Who stayed with the Federation?
Well, who are the bad guys now that the Emerald Chain is gone? Like, who's the Federation, like, worried about? Like, what are the Klingons up to? We haven't heard about them. Like, what are the, like, does the Dominion still exist? Like, any of these other groups, entities, whatever you want to call them. But, like, yeah, who are the other superpowers? Like, I don't think, like, the Federation is, like, the only, like standing nation in the galaxy. Like, there's got to be some other superpowers, right?
Sure.
So I'd love to see that stuff or just get some explanations on it or just flesh out some details and world building. And also, like, I think it was so cool when season 4 in the first episode, they're mentioning stuff from Lower Decks. And then they have, like, a big hat tip to Picard and kind of, like, help fix a Picard, you know, continuity issue, like the synth thing. And I think it'd be so nice if somewhere in Discovery Season 5, if they slip in a reference to Prodigy. I would really, like, love that.
It'd be fun.
Yeah, especially with, you know, that show's had such a rough time that I would love it getting a shout out in one of the big shows like Discovery. But what did you have that didn't make the cut that you want to share?
Let's see. I would like to see, I think this is something that could happen in some way, shape, or form. I've mentioned Vash from TNG any number of times in the past, just because I thought she's a fun supporting character that they didn't do enough with back when. Picard's on again, off again, treasure hunter girlfriend. I feel like this is the season to, like, drop her in there in some way. Yes, she existed, like, 1,000 years earlier. But through the miracle of holograms, time travel, she was once hanging out with Q for a long time. I think you could get her in there, bring in the actress. She is a, like, have her, maybe the treasure at one point was something that went through her hands. And, you know, she leaves a hologram behind as a warning, you know, don't go after this. It'll just bring misery. You know, one of those kind of fun things. There's lots of tropes to do with chasing down a treasure. And I think it'd be cool if they stuck in. There's not a whole lot of treasure hunters and things in Star Trek history, but she's one of them. She absolutely is a Tomb Raider. So I would love it if she showed.
Yeah. Or another good use for her. I mean, I think that'd be cool if they worked her into
you can even just reference somehow, her, too.
Yeah. Or you could even have, like, here's, like, a holographic recording of her doing stuff or something.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of did that to get Spock in season 3. You know, they had, like, Leonard Nimoy show up when they were using the TNG footage of him hanging out on Romulus. But if Alex Kurtzman gets his wish and he gets to make some made-for-streaming movies and does, like, some Picard follow-up stuff, that would also be they could just have her, you know, in her own time period then in the 25th century.
Sure.
With Vash and Jack Crusher. I want to see, like, the two of them. Like, and remember how Beverly doesn't like Vash. So that would be, like, if she was like, oh, you were hanging out with my son, I want to see her, like, get mad about that too. That's, ooh, yeah, I want Vash in that capacity, but I would also love to see her in Disco. Why not do both? They could fit her in both, I think. That's
what else you got, Fathery?
Those are just those two little ones were all.
Oh, let's see.
I thought about making up, like, something stupid, but I don't know.
I mean, I've got at least one or two, like, sort of dumb ones. Here's a dumb one. I want to see Linus, because it's the final season, get a non-joke little mini arc or story bit.
Like, you know how in Star Trek VI, like, when Scotty gets the cool moment at the end when he's the one who phasers the assassin and shoots the guy out the window? Like, give
so
Linus,
cool.
like, that, like, cool little moment, like, towards
That'd
the
be
end,
fun.
You know?
That'd be fun. Make him do some big Saurian leap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay, here's my weirdest one, Fathery. But, like, I think it'd be the coolest thing in the world if they did this.
All right,
let's
get weird.
It's a small thing. All right. When we first talked about the first episode of Star Trek Discovery, when we talked about the credit sequence, which has changed in minor ways for every scene, every season, but still holds true to the basic thing. There's a little bit at the very end of it, right before they, like, flash the Discovery, the final credits and the show starts, where they show those hands reaching out, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then they're, like, they're pulled apart, and they kind of fizzle away.
This always bothered you. That bothered you the first time we saw that, I remember.
Well, I think at the time I was like, oh, well, they were depicting a galaxy in chaos. It was war was happening, and so I almost felt like it was a little bit of a mission statement concept where they were saying this is about, you know, humanity trying to pull together during, like, this time when they're drifting apart. And, like, I want them to reanimate it so that the hands clasp. I want I want that sequence redone just for the final episode, season or final episode or whatever.
And then everyone who hits the skip intro would miss it. They would.
That's right. And then
that's why I never hit skip intro, because some TV shows. I'm the only person who knows what TV shows change their intros, because I'm the only one who sits through all of them.
I sometimes watch them.
Did you know X-Men 97 did that?
Did what? Changes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Because I wanted to watch the thing. So, yeah, I saw that they did little tweaks here and there.
It's a fun theme song.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's my weirdest one, is that I want a slight shift in the animation there. So it becomes thematically heartwarming now.
I'd like that, too. I almost wish that you hadn't told me that, because now I'm going to be disappointed when that does not happen.
It would just be such a perfect capper. It would be so much in keeping with the Star Trek Discovery thematics and stuff.
So right now, Alex and Michelle are listening to this, and they're like, shit, we should have done that for Dave and Fathery.
It's not too late. There's last minute stuff that could be done.
Yeah. go fix that. It won't take long at all. You can do that. You can fix that in the afternoon. I think y'all do it. I believe in you.
That's right. Some animator probably already did it just for fun. Just need to upload it.
I see in the audience, we have some fun suggestions for fun things to see. I don't know if Benjinium meant it in this way, but Benjinium suggesting a 10C exchange crew in a big-ass Starfleet uniform. So that might be something fun to see in Season 5.
I like that.
Geo47 says that she wants a connection to Calypso greater than Zora having a dream. But I mean, that's what I'm saying is the explanation. Like, we don't need them to explain that short trek Calypso on screen. Like, Zora can dream. I think it was just a dream. We're never going to see the Discovery look like Season 2 Disco again. It's never going to, like, convert back to that. Like, that interaction with Kraft, I don't think is ever going to happen unless it's, like, something that Zora dreams. So she just had a dream about a guy named Kraft.
Speaking of the 10C thing, I feel like this came up off mic and for other reasons a few days ago, but a Bowel crewman, from the Kelpian planet, from what was it, Kaminar?
Kaminar.
Would be cool. Like, a kind of scary crewman would be fun, you know, with them having to sort of learn to work with that.
Yeah, I almost want, like, something comedic on Kaminar of just people, like, having to work together with the bike. Like, they're planning, like, a community fair or something. You got, like, this tar monster saying...
Somebody's like, just like, yeah, you're partnered with him.
Yeah.
he's just
like, talking about, like, set up, like, the decorations for the children at the festival, or just, you know, something, like, so, like, innocent and cutesy like that, but it's, like, this tar monster.
It's it's been, like, asked to do a project with Armus.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could do that sincerely and still, like, play it for laughs, but, you know, not from, like, a mean-spirited place.
Right.
I think
there's no reason not to show them as, like, when he starts talking as being very sincere and all of that. But yeah, I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, so fun stuff. People need to let us know what y'all want, because we're not gonna have time tonight for subspace transmissions, but we're bringing back the subspace transmission segment of the show. So y'all, please give us some feedback on things you want to see in the final season, and then we can. Well, we have a big show next week, also, Dave. We have a packed show in a week, because we have not only the first brand new episode of Star Trek to talk about in a hot minute, but we have two episodes to talk about, because they're going to premiere two of them.
It's going to be wild. Yeah, and it'd be fun to have some subspace transmissions to say what people were hoping for, and we can talk about whether they got them or not. But as I see in the comments, by the way, Jill says she wants Kovich to remain an enigma. Don't explain him too much.
Yeah, I want him to have a lot of presence in this final season, but I never want to know too much about Kovich. I want him to always be mysterious. They have promised he has a bigger part, and in what we've seen, that looks to be true, I think. So, Jill and all the other Kovich fans out there, I think we have some exciting Kovich stuff. So, I think this might be the best season for Kovich. Our favorite Kovich scenes might be waiting right around the corner for us in Season 5.
Interesting.
I get really hyperbolic when I'm excited. I'm like, you know, things are either, like, so terrible or, like, so great. You
this
know?
Could They're be
like,
the best ever.
Yeah. But I am pretty hyped right now. It's going to be nice to, I don't know, have, like, the certainty in my life. Like, I don't know what's going to happen this week, but I know I'm going to have an episode of Star Trek to talk about with Dave on Friday. So that'll be fun to be back back on the grind, as some might say. But
yeah, one final voyage on the Discovery we'll be beaming up for.
So I'm looking forward to everyone who's going to go on that voyage with us, and we'll be live on Fridays. You can also listen to us on podcast platforms. Thank you so much, Patreon supporters. That really does make all of this much easier when the expenses are covered. And if you can't help us out on Patreon but still want to support the show, please make sure you're subscribed to the YouTube channel and rate the podcast. You can rate us on Apple Podcast. You can rate us on Spotify. So those 5-star ratings really help. Gives us a boost in the algorithms, helps other people find us, other potentially people that will rate us, potentially people who can join the Patreon and help grow the show, and we can keep doing what we're doing. So
we've made it pretty far, so let's keep going.
Yeah, and it'll be sad. It's gonna be sad to say goodbye in 10 weeks when we sign off on the last disco.
It'll
episode.
Be an ending of sorts, no matter what. Yeah, we will be reaching it.
Well, I'm so glad to have this this community to go on this trip with. So,
oh yeah.
Until next week, as always, live long and prosper, y'all.
Listen to the Text Trek podcast through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or at text-trek.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/text-trek, and follow Fathery on Twitter at TXTrek. Please support us by liking our videos and subscribing to our channel on YouTube. Thank you, and take care.